Hello and welcome to the Old Man Orange Podcast. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes, bringing you another Old Man Orange Presents via VHS episode. One of them from the rarities vault that we have from back in the day that just never got put out. So come join us for another fun-filled retro movie review. Let's jump on in.
Welcome to another episode of the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. Tonight, we're going back to the decade that, you know, treats us so well. We're going back to the wild and wonderful 80s, and we're going back to a very specific time and place in the 80s. Just one of the most iconic, you know, locations in any particular period of time in the American history. We're talking about Miami in the 80s, okay? Uh-huh. You got, you know, this Reagan era, you know, you got your drug running going on, okay? You got, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff happening down there. And it seems like, you know, a third world, you know, country when you look up the news stories, but really it was the sexiest place on planet Earth, Miami in the 1980s. So we're going to look at Miami Vice, the pilot, the two-part pilot, essentially a movie, Brother's Keeper, which was later called. And we're just going to go back and reminisce about, one of the best shows ever made, some people say. And to do that, I'm your host, Wesley, and I'm always, as always, joined by Spencer Scott Holmes, and we're crocking dubs tonight.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. Boy, it's one of those ones, going back to Miami Vice, because this was one of the shows that's like, this show in Dukes of Hazzard, where like, it sounds so weird, but like, in high school, me and a buddy watched the living daylights out of both these ones like that, and it's funny, just even watching again, because it's been a while since I've seen it, I'm like, well, now I see where so much of my like filmmaking like comes from. It's like straight out of these shows, because that was the thing, if you'd watch stuff like this, you go like, I think I can attach a camera that way to a car or something like that, you know what I mean? But gosh, yeah, it's like one of those ones. I really do think Miami Vice is one of the strongest TV shows ever made. You watch it and you kind of go, gosh, they can't even make TV shows half as good as this nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so good.
Yeah, Miami Vice is special. It really, really is. And it kind of changed television. And it's funny you mentioned that about Dukes of Hazzard. I sent you some randomly generated AI images the other day because I was on this account. And I just wrote in Dukes of Hazzard, Miami Vice crossover. And it gave us one of the sickest pictures. I was trying to create like an AI version of us, like, but like in action scenes and stuff. And it didn't really work out like I wanted to, but it did give us that badass Miami Vice. Essentially, they set it in the Everglades. So you have like, it was like a Ferrari, but there was also like a, you know, a Dodge Charger or something.
Yeah. And then our guys had like big beards, which was like the best part. So it looked like a cool Southern rock band that just happened to have like that Miami Vice kind of slickness to it.
Yeah. And every time I regenerated the photos, like added another layer to it, like, okay, let's do this. It turned into more of a Kenny Loggins, Michael McDonald, 80s Miami sexual fantasy. It's kind of what it turned into more.
That was actually, I didn't think about Pekela, but that's 100% what they started looking like as those characters went on.
Yeah, it really did start looking like Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald, because they were bros, you know, back in the day. But God, this is just like, Miami Vice is so moody, so atmospheric, just so much angst, but so much style, such cool characters, such cool cars, banging fucking music every episode. We're bringing the hits, okay? Every episode is 80s excess, and the show has it. The show has it.
Dude, that's the thing too, is that you think about like, even in just in this pilot episode, it's like all the songs they chose, they're all like literally like number one songs that are still hardcore remembered and things like that. It's not even like there's just a couple of songs in there where it's like, ah, here's one of those songs. Well, that just never caught on or anything. There's none of that. It's like they really picked them like real well.
Well, let's see, you got Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Cyndi Lauper. Mm-hmm. And then you have All Night Long by Lionel Richie, but in the episode, it's not by Lionel Richie. I think that other guy was singing it, right?
I think
that version was good.
Yeah. Well, even the Girls Just Want to Have Fun one sounds different than like the normal version.
Yeah. I, I still think it was Cyndi Lauper, but I think it may be even like a different cut or something.
I think so too, because when I was listening to it, I'm like, that doesn't sound like the exact version, you know, but I was still thinking it was her.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the song, the 80s song, the epitome of just no pop song has been more badass than In the Air Tonight.
Yeah. No, and they just, and then when you combined it with, you know, Crockett and Tubbs driving off for like vengeance in a Ferrari through Miami with those really cool shots of like where, you know, you got it like on the hood of the car and you see all the lights passing by and the side shots where the camera's just like attached by the wheel and everything like that.
Oh man, it's the most, it might be the most, like if somebody said, hey, explain the 80s to me with just a scene, and that might be it, because it's just so fucking hard, man. It's just so good.
Oh man, it's so, yeah, that right there does kind of tell you a lot. Well, it's almost like that thing that's like this sort of a separate thing, but really kind of relates quite well. But it's like, it's why Vice City Grand Theft Auto is such a good game, is because that game gives you that Miami Vice mixed with Scarface and, you know, of course, a couple other movies and so on too. But it like, it's like if you ever just wanted to run around that actual world and pretty much live there, boom, that game transports you. I think that's why that game was like so magical, is because not only did I just have an ultra obsession with the, you know, the 80s throughout pretty much the 90s and 2000s and today, but like right when that came out, it was like all that stuff. I was like, man, I love Miami Vice. I love Scarface. And now you're giving me a game that I can pretty much go and do all that in.
Yeah. And I mean, the new one's supposed to be in Miami, I think, right? The new, if they ever release it.
Are they going back to that? That's cool then.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be like essentially all of Florida. And yeah. And then you're going to have, I think a female protagonist is the thing. Cool.
Yeah, I think that's neat. I remember, well, we all know what happened when San Andreas came out. There was those certain people that kind of flipped the lid when that was. And I was just like, yeah, it's cool. It's like a, you know, a 90s gangster flick. Like, what, you don't like that? Like, those movies are amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a bunch of Scottish guys who watch TV all day long. That's like, that's who makes Grand Theft Auto. It's kind of the funniest thing when you think about it. Because Grand Theft Auto feels like such an American thing. It's like, no, it's a bunch of Scottish people put those all together. Mm-hmm. The same creator is still the guy that writes them.
That's amazing. Yeah, I can't wait for the new ones. And yeah, that game was awesome. I remember owning that on PS2. My mom walking in one time and like, what are you playing? I'm like, I'm just shooting hookers, mom. Like, you know, they definitely knocked it out of the park. They captured that essence. I mean, there's a Phil, was that generated later? Or was that Phil Collins concert in the game? I can't remember.
I don't think there's a Phil Collins concert in the game. I think Phil Collins plays a character in the game. I might be kind of mistaken, because by the time Vice City came, everybody wanted to kind of jump in there. I mean, Grand Theft Auto 3 has a couple of like, you know, big actors in it, but like Vice City and San Andreas, it was like everybody wanted to be in that.
There's a video, I've seen it multiple times, and it's a Phil Collins, and it's In the Air Tonight, but it's in the style of Vice City. It's like a concert, a Phil Collins concert. So I was always like, I was trying to remember, was that in the game or did somebody just make that later? So I guess they just made it later.
Yeah, it's Grand Theft Auto, so there's so many people just use that as like a movie production studio practically.
Yeah, I don't have a current gaming console, but I'll if that one comes out, I will get one.
Yeah, we're two steps away that you could pretty much probably stream almost all that kind of stuff without having to worry about getting the console.
That's true. Yeah, it's not that far away. But and we streamed this one. How did you watch this?
I had the DVD.
Oh, okay. I didn't. I watched it on Tubi, and it did have commercials, but I'm like, just adds to it, you know?
Yeah. You know, ironically, I tried to watch a part of it on Tubi while I was like kind of waiting in the car at one point. I'm like, I'll just catch up on like an extra 20 minutes of it. I'm like, Jesus, there's like 3 minutes of commercials I got to wait through here. I don't know if I can handle this anymore. I'll just wait till I get back home.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I hate to break it to you. Commercials are going to come back here soon.
They really are. It's like one of those ones like that. They're forcing it. I think it's just that thing they realize. It's like, the, you know, $10 a month or whatever, $15 a month that people pay for streaming is not the same ad revenue as commercials.
That's what I've been saying. It's not. It's they're going to do it. Like, I think what will end up happening is they'll bring commercials before and after whatever you're watching. I don't think we'll ever go back to commercial breaks and stuff unless it's like really long.
Yeah. Or sports.
Yeah. Well, sports. Yeah. But I mean, I think you'll start getting stuff. If you're streaming, like let's say Stranger Things or something or Miami Vice or whatever it is, you'll start getting commercials at the end of, you know, every episode before mm-hmm. the next one starts is what you're going to start seeing here soon. I'm fine with it.
Sometimes the way that Amazon sort of does it, but they're mostly just commercials for themselves.
Yeah. Now you're going to start seeing like Procter and Gamble come back and.
Well, because I think what it is, that's why they keep trying to offer off those like here's like the $3 or the $5 package, but you get commercials but they're just trying to get people to get that version instead of paying like, you know, the extra $10 to get rid of the commercials. But that extra $10. Yeah, mm-hmm. That can't be the same thing.
Yeah, I'll keep it on YouTube Premium, but the rest of them, I don't want commercials.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm at the point now. I don't know if I can handle commercials anymore, like on a normal base. I could take 80s commercials if I was watching Miami Vice, the way it was intended. I could take all those commercials, but I don't want any modern commercials in the way of my programming.
No. Let's go ahead and talk about Miami Vice. I guess we should jump into the rewind review.
Yes.
I guess if we're talking TV, it should be the rerun review.
Yeah, because that's totally what it is. It's like a rerun. It's like watching it on USA when they get the syndication going.
There you go. Well, if you're new to the show, obviously the rewind review is where we do the review of the movie, obviously. But we also like to go back in time and look at the pop culture that was surrounding whatever we're doing. And Miami Vice debuted on September 16th, 1984. And we are doing the pilot episode. So we're doing these episodes came out September 16th, 1984. They were re-released a year later in 1985 with actual higher ratings. But what I have here in front of me are not only the TV listings. I still did the box office, even though this mm-hmm. was in the theaters, because it gives you an idea of what's going on at the time. And it's 1984. So you know that box office is going to be banging.
Yep.
Like it's just going to be. And, but if you went back to Sunday night on September 16, 1984, at 9 PM, Miami Vice Brothers Keeper part one of two was airing, on NBC. Over on CBS, you had, a Sunday night movie called Some Kind of Hero.
Hmm.
And then, at 9 PM on, ABC, you have Sunday Night Football, the Denver Broncos at the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, there we go. Yep. The old classic Denver Broncos game going on.
There you go. And so you know, in case you're interested, Denver won the game.
Yeah,
24-14. I definitely looked it up because I was like, I saw it and I'm like, I got to know.
Yeah, I want to know now.
Yeah, and it was back in the 80s, which football, let me tell you, NFL kind of sucked in the 80s. I was looking at the stats of this. Like, I think John Elway, 15 of 35 for 170 yards, and they won.
Yeah. So,
and he threw two picks. No, he sorry, threw one pick. Sorry.
Well, the 80s is when the 49ers had the majority of their, like, high wind area.
No, they had the majority of the talent in the league because there was no salary cap. So they had Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and then everyone else was just trying. You know, the Giants were good. The Giants, you know, had Lawrence Taylor. They had the defense.
Yeah.
You know, they had the answer on the defensive side. But, yeah. So, the Broncos won that night. But you're not watching Sunday Night Football when the debut of Miami Vice, the most hard-ass, cocaine-driven, Michael Mann inspired angsty moody thing is on television. But you might have went to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did, the box office, this is the week of September 14th through 20th, 1984. Number one at the box office is a little film called Ghostbusters.
Just a little one.
Little tiny film. Tightrope is number two at the box office. What even is
Clint Eastwood one? Clint Eastwood movie?
Tightrope. Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. The Karate Kid. Prince
movie.
Yeah. Prince. Karate Kid at number four.
Oh, huge one.
Yeah. A Woman in Red. And then I'll name some other ones off that you may have heard of. Red Dawn, Gremlins, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Dreamscape and Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, which we have different opinions on this one. That's the film that drives me crazy that you don't like. It seems like such
The weirdest thing is I thought I was going to really, for the many a years, I thought I was going to be like, man, this is going to be the greatest movie. I had like everything about it just sounds like it's so good. And then I remember watching it, I was just like, well, this was just okay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was expecting. I don't know. Maybe the bar was raised too high on it. I'm not too sure, but
I want us to revisit that one because it is such a unique thing. It is. I can't think of anything else quite like it. It's just such a weird thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Buckaroo Banzai rounds at your box office, bringing in $171,000. But it's been out for a minute.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the thing, is you got good choices that weekend.
Did I say Revenge of the Nerds?
No, you didn't mention that one.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds in there too. Dreamscape, Soldier Story, Exterminator 2, Ninja 3, Domination.
Ooh, Ninja 3.
Yeah, I mean, that's every one of these banger, 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 banger. I was just like, yeah.
You're gonna have a good time no matter what you choose. Let's just say that.
In 1984, yeah, was there's. 94 is great. Obviously, we love 97, but I think 84 might be the best movie year. It's really, really good. 99 is good.
Yeah, 99 is a good one.
99 is really good.
A lot of the fours are good. Actually, 2004 is actually pretty solid, too.
Okay, what even came out in 2004? Isn't it weird that I know, like, older years?
You can, like, name drop things from, like, 74, but you actually were at the theater in 2004 and you can't figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because of the podcast. It's because I'm always researching stuff. Yeah, older. Came out in this month of that year, and I can't tell you what happened in 2004.
That's how I always feel too. It's just so much of the stuff is that everything that I've always just been into is already older, and like the stuff that I am. That's what makes me feel older the farther I go on, because all the things that I like are now getting to this point where it's like, oh, it's 50th year anniversary. You're like, that's what I enjoyed when I was 10 years old. It makes me almost feel like I'm at my 50th anniversary then, if that's the case.
Journey is doing a 50th anniversary tour this year, next year. And they're opening with Toto.
Oh, really?
I'm tempted to go see it, but I can't sing it with that karaoke singer. It's just not the same.
Yeah, that's what I feel. I want to see Steve Perry.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Even if he's not as good as he was.
Yeah, that's sometimes. I mean, it's not like it's one of those ones. It's not like Kiss, where like Peter, Chris, and Ace Frehley, like those guys. They sailed away a long time ago. Kiss has been what it is for much longer than they were actually even in the band. Like, I don't need to have that. Like, I'm fine with Kiss the way it is now. I think it's like more dialed in. But there's some of those ones like that where that would be like if you didn't have Paul Stanley in Kiss, you'd be like, well, what am I doing?
It's not true. I mean, the guy is good. He is very good. I'm not dissing him at all. It's just I don't want to see it, but I might be inclined to, just because 50th anniversary, that was like my mom's band. She loved Journey, so I might have to go.
Well, I feel like Journey can always pull that card and be like, yo, Steve Perry isn't on the first two albums anyway, so I don't know what you guys are bitching about. It's like we carried on before he was here.
Yeah, well... That band is Steve Perry though. When he gets there, I mean, not that Neil Sean's great,
yeah.
I mean, they're all good, but goddamn, Journey's so good. But Miami Vice, September 16th, 1984, changed television history. I read a little excerpt. Somebody said it felt like the first new thing to come along, the first time TV had really changed, since its inception. It's like everything else had kind of been going into the same formula to some extent. I mean, I don't totally agree with that. You had some stuff kind of be revolutionary and, change the game a little bit, but this felt more cinematic than anything else. I mean, you compare it to like a Dragnet or something like that. And this one has your TV formula. It's set up for television. It has a TV style narrative. Mm-hmm. But it just has a cinematic feel. And now that's the thing. I mean, now, all of them do. Like, Narcos, anything like that, that's the closest thing I can think of that's kind of new. They all have that cinematic feel to them, unless they're like one of the cheap CBS, network current day network television ripoffs of like when they brought back Magnum PI with some guy without a mustache. I mean, like,
why? I hate to start saying when things are like that. I mean, there's certain things like there, 'cause you know, there's the Miami Vice Michael Mann movie with Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx that was actually pretty good.
It was good, but that was still, it still had Michael Mann though.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing.
Yeah. You know, it still was like, it still was able to capture all like the, you know, Miami Vice this, where like sometimes some of those other ones, like remember like when they made like the Lethal Weapon TV show? I never watched it, but it just seemed like such a, what? That's not who we're here for. You know, just give us Lethal Weapon 5. That's what people want.
Oh God, it's, yeah. And then the main actor got like all crazy and they had to kick him off the show. And I think it just ended at that point. Have they tried to reboot this show?
I don't think so. I was thinking about that. I'm like, cause I was, was there a Miami Vice, like another show, like around that same time that Lethal Weapon and like the Magnum PI? I don't think there was. And like the Hawaii Five, because Hawaii 5-0 did so good that I think that they thought they could get more of that stuff. But Hawaii 5-0, I think there was enough time between the shows that, you know, that once it's like in the 60s, it's like, okay, that's a long enough one. Like Miami Vice still isn't, I don't think, old enough that, you know.
Well, plus it's just so iconic and has such a unique style and it was so good. You know what I mean? Like you can, like, I don't mean to put anything down from like the 60s or anything, but you can improve upon it tremendously.
Yeah.
With today, with what you have available to you today, you know what I mean? And, you know, digital filmmaking where you can look at everything and do everything fast and play around with it. And, you know, there's a lot more freedom in making television shows now. And so, yeah, you can improve on that, but man, but like, Miami Vice is still replicated. It's still revered for its style. I mean, just a few years ago, the Miami Heat had their Miami Vice uniforms. Everybody flipped out because they were fucking sexy. I mean, they're so good. Like they just nailed something. And it was everything. It was the cars. It was the clothes. I mean, how does Don Johnson look so cool and comfortable simultaneously? It's like, hey, I look badass, but also I'm wearing pajamas.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like that's really what he's wearing. He's like, it's like his guy just wearing a t-shirt, you know, some loose pants, not even wearing socks, you know, doesn't have to shave, you know, like he's got it all dialed in.
That's actually kind of me most times. like I forego socks unless I absolutely have to. Which is probably gross, but hey, that's just me. I'll be barefooted, honestly. If I can get away with it, I'm usually barefoot. I don't like shoes or socks or anything. So yeah, but this is definitely, this appeals to me tremendously because it's just honestly like, you know, I'm a cross between this wanting to be this style and then also just the general beach bum that has the boat, maybe does a, you know, charter fishing or something down in the Keys, you know, wears a bandana on his head for some reason. I don't know why.
Captain Ron.
Yeah.
So that's what I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah. Captain Ron to me feels like that's like almost like one of the most ideal things that I feel like I want to strive for. I feel that's like the perfect life is if you're the guy who's just freewheeling, you're just living off, you know, you got one skill that you kind of keep around and you know, take people's boats and, you know, show them around and drive and be the pilot for that. And maybe not the best at it, but you just got the right attitude to go for it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just, see, that's just my vibe. But Florida, even with its craziness, okay, even with its political nonsense that goes on, and that's from both sides. I mean, it's just a crazy, it's the purple state, you know. Even with all that, man, I love everything about Florida. It's just so, it's just, what is it? What is Hooters' catchphrase? Delightfully tacky yet unrefined?
Yeah.
That's Florida.
Yeah.
Florida is a Hooters.
See, I've always wanted to go to Florida. I've never been there, but like, mainly it's, you know, due to like things like this, you know. And sometimes I'm always afraid that like, will it not be as cool as it was on TV or in Vice City? Like, is it going to like not be the same way?
Miami would disappoint you, I think.
Yeah, well, if it's like a lot of cities nowadays, they just don't have that mystique and that vibe that used to be. I think it sounds weird, but the internet sort of killed cities in a weird way. It made it not nearly as, they don't have as much importance or relevance or something like that. It's like San Francisco. San Francisco is like a definite like shadow of its former self. You know, it just doesnn't carry like what it, in the 90s and back, you know, that was a real cool place. And there was so much unique stuff about it. And now it's just like, it's you know, lost a lot of that character. You know, I even worry about that with Vegas, that Vegas probably doesn't have, you know, every year just gets farther and farther and away from what really made it.
Well, they had that Sphere now.
Yeah.
And everybody's going crazy. Did you see any of that?
I don't think so.
Holy fuck. It's crazy. We'll talk about that later. But Las Vegas Sphere, Google it. U2 did a concert in there. I don't even like U2. But it's the wildest thing I've ever seen. That Sphere is amazing. Inside and outside. I didn't know you can go inside it till the other day. And then, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, it really, really sold a lot on Florida and people going down there and going to Miami and that Miami Beach lifestyle and, you know, drugs too. I mean, was a big thing down there. You know, this was like, at that time, that was like going to, you know, Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, from a financial standpoint, it was literally like, I mean, you could make a lot of money. It's a gold rush, essentially.
Yeah, it is like in the 80s, that is such like the gold rush era. You know, you got all the kind of like, you know, Cubans and Puerto Ricans and all that stuff down there. So you got this cool cultural mix of everybody, you know, and yeah, just shipments of all kinds of illegal stuff. You know, everybody's dressing cool. You know, there's just so much interesting things going on in this one locale. It's kind of like, it's like California, but especially back then, it's like, it's California with like the less taxes and cheaper, like, you know, sections and so on like that. So you can almost kind of have, because that was like what it was, is like that Miami area really took over a lot of like what, you know, like Santa Monica and all that stuff kind of used to offer.
Well, I mean, see, the thing is, it was the perfect time. It was the perfect thing at the perfect time because I mean, I almost feel like I'm glorifying drug stuff, but the reason it worked is because, you know, we're in the Reagan era, you know, it's just unbridled capitalism. So everybody's making a ton of money. And then it was just, look, we all know now that we were, you know, kind of helping out the industry a little bit. Like we would pretend like we were drawing a hard line and like, oh, keep this stuff out of here. But really,
yeah,
you know,
there's too much money to be made.
There was definitely a give and take. There was an industry created trying to stop it. And there was an industry created not stopping it. So it was, you know, a full circle kind of thing. And so that was the place to be back then, I guess, if you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it really is, because it's that kind of thing that you could start probably so many other different types of businesses around there and probably make even more money than the guy selling the drugs and everything like that, if you think about it.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah.
It's just like the gold rush in the 1800s. You're better off being the guy selling things to the gold miners than the guy going out and trying to get gold.
That's fair. And you're not getting shot at.
Yeah, exactly. Or getting stabbed on your claim.
Yeah, exactly.
In the middle of the night.
September 16, 1984 is episode 1 and 2. Directed by Thomas Carter, who did a lot of other cool stuff, done a lot of TV stuff, did Coach Carter, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Starring, obviously, Don Johnson. And then you have James Crockett, James Sonny Crockett, which we'll talk about his football thing in just a moment, because there's a funny aspect to that to me. You have Philip Michael Thomas as Tubbs, as Detective
Ricardo
Tubbs. And I got knocked off. And then, you know, a lot of other very famous people show up throughout this show. I mean, Bruce Willis is in the show at one point. Ted Nugent. We watched
Ted Nugent's in it, which is just so amazing. Not in the pilot episode, but later down the line.
Jimmy Smits is in here. I'm just scrolling through. Oh, this is just this episode. I'm just seeing these people. But the weird cameo in this one is Martin Ferreira plays Trini DeSoto.
Yeah.
Which most of you will know him from the guy who gets eaten off the toilet in Jurassic Park. he plays, I'm sorry, but that was the worst Cuban accent I've ever. I honestly look like a Saturday Night Live skit of Scarface. Is what it looked. It was. He was atrocious. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think he's a pretty good actor overall, but in this, he was. It was almost. It was like
over
the top. It was the accents in episode one, The Phantom Menace, is what it was.
Well, you know, he did say, his character said that, you know, he's been up on pretty much cocaine without mentioning cocaine for the last four nights. So, you know, I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. He nailed that part of it, but God, the accent was so just atrocious. And he dropped it at like three times at least.
Yeah, well, it's too much to keep up with. There's no way. That's like the weird thing, too, because even Tubbs has this accent. He's got this Jamaican accent going on, which probably is going to be kind of confusing. If like, this is the first time you've ever watched this, you know, someone's like, wait a second, is that guy Jamaican or is he not? I only saw him just for a moment in the beginning. And now all of a sudden he's got a Jamaican accent. Like, you know, I don't know who this character is yet. Like, you're trying to piece all this together. Like, what the hell's going on?
It is kind of a weird opening to the show. It ends up being a really good opening, but it's a little disjointed. Especially if you don't give the rest of the episode a chance to kind of catch everything up. It's just kind of like, what's going on? Who are these people? This is Miami Vice. Why are we starting in New York here?
Yeah. You know, it hard cuts into the episode too. There's not like an intro or anything like that. It's just like Tubbs sitting there in the car waiting, you know, for these like criminal guys to kind of come out in, you know, Brooklyn area. Got Rolling Stones playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Started off right for me.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Stone songs too. It was Miss You.
Yeah.
Which is their take on disco, but I'll take Stone's disco any day. I'm fine with that. But yeah, I mean, it opens in New York, and then this whole thing, this back and forth happens. And then it's revealed through flashbacks throughout the episode, what's going on, why Tubbs is in Miami, you know, getting interfered in Don Johnson shit. But that was his first. This is Philip Michael Thomas's first television or movie role.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's his first thing he ever did. So I didn't get a chance to look at his whole bio. He might have done stuff on stage, but this is, maybe he had been in a commercial or something before, but this was his first TV, and he gets this huge, massive role, which, you know, TV in the 80s, it has to be said too, it's not like even in the 90s, it was still, people were getting cable, but it was still dominated by the networks.
Yeah.
And, that's where all the money was going. That's where all the big shows were on the network TVs. Cable was kind of looked down upon.
Yeah, because cable was almost kind of like, you know, the, you know, maybe one step up from UHF, but not that far off.
Yeah, it was a niche thing. And it wasn't, you know, what it became like in the 2000s before everything is, you know, just bullshit now.
Yeah. But, or even the 90s, by the time that is, I feel like in the 70s and the 80s, if you had cable, you just got it because you got all the cool eclectic programming. Like, I felt like that's what kind of add up. And there was more movie channels, of course, HBO being the big thing to have if you have cable.
Mm-hmm. And then MTV when it was showing music.
Yeah. Because MTV, yeah, you wouldn't have got that without cable and so on like that. Because as growing up, I only had the antenna and the networks there, so I didn't have that initially until I got satellite. So it took me a moment to get to like a cable experience world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, also ESPN had to be massive because it was like, you know, your local news, it would probably show like clips from big games, but that whole thing where you could watch all the clips from all the Sunday afternoon NFL games and keep up with it. And then same with basketball. It definitely helped basketball.
Yeah.
So your cable was massive and it became a big thing, but at this time it was the networks dominating everything. And so you had a big show on a network TV, then it's bigger than doing movies in some way. I mean, think about Tom Selleck having to decide between doing Indiana Jones and Magnum P.I. He's like, well, I'm contractually obligated. But back in the day, you would, you know, in the 90s, you would break that contract or find some way around it to do a movie.
Yeah.
But back then, I mean, look at all the shit Michael J. Fox had to do just to do Back to the Future. Like, he had to do both families because Family Ties was massive.
Yeah.
Magnum P.I. was massive. So if you had that shit going on then, you were huge.
Yeah. Well, and the thing too is, like, you know, when you have the TV, you got the much more guaranteed paycheck for quite some time, you know. And sometimes a movie could be a flash of the pan thing, or maybe it could be a huge hit, but there's a lot more gamble with a film, you know. Granted, I think in the longest run, movies are where you get more legacy, though, because I hate to sort of say it, but it's like, for example, like Michael J. Fox and Family Ties. Family Ties was a big show. I remember watching a lot when I was a kid. No, I don't hear anybody ever bringing up Family Ties anymore. I haven't even seen that pop up on TV in a very long time, or anywhere for that matter. So it's kind of Back to the Future is what keeps Michael J. Fox alive, not Family Ties.
100%. And unless you had a sitcom, which is rewatchable all the time, like, people will keep The Office and Friends and Frasier running on a loop.
Yeah.
And so people are constantly reliving those, but you're not always going back. You might revisit Miami Vice once, you know, like, I watched this in the '80s. Let me go back and revisit this whole series. And you go through all the episodes and you'll probably never do that again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But sitcoms you would. And I think that's the thing with movies. The reason it's more iconic, because Back to the Future is an hour and however many minutes.
Yeah.
Pop it in, watch it. You can watch that same thing over and over again. I've seen all three of those 100 times. I'll probably see Brother's Keeper maybe one more time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know, it's like Miami Vice. It's like, really, it's like, I watched the living daylights out of it. Like, and whenever the DVDs came out, which I guess would have been like 2003 or something like that. Like, when the season set started coming, that was when I really started getting into Miami Vice. And, you know, that's probably about realistic. I don't think I've watched them since, you know, the mid 2000s. That was about the last time watching through it. And that's not saying I wouldn't watch it again, because in watching this episode, I was like, oh, I was kind of sold. But it reminds me, like, was like probably every 20 years until I die, I'll go back and revisit that, you know, get remembered by it, you know, and then go, okay, cool.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I think the reason it's appealing to me too is she's just stylistically just lines up so much with what I like, if AI was to write a movie from my brain at this point in time of my life, it would definitely have some Miami Vice elements. It'd definitely be at the beach. It'd have some synthy soundtrack. It'd have angst, edge, all the things that Miami Vice has in spades. It just has so much of that. But I mean, this one, if you obviously, we're not doing, obviously, I've never seen the whole series. I've seen this, and I've seen episodes here and there. I think I watched the Bruce Willis episode just because I wanted to see what was going on with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, definitely seen a billion clips from the show. But I mean, I guess have you watched the whole thing?
Yeah, I watched all five seasons back in the day. It was like, that was like, I had a buddy that he would just buy all the seasons for stuff. And like, that's like the same thing with Dukes of Hazzard. We watched all, whatever, nine seasons of Dukes of Hazzard. You know, you start from like the real good episodes, and you kind of get to the point where, like, oh, now they're in NASCAR, so they're not in it for like a season. And then when they come back, they start having those car jumps where they just literally launch a toy car. Just like, yep, this is where the show's kind of go. This is where it jumped the shark. But it also was kind of funny because they'd go to a jump, and then it's like literally look like a Hot Wheels track, and someone like launches a car in slow motion.
Yeah, you could always tell when a show does that. You know where that came from, to jump the shark?
Yeah, from Happy Days.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that until a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, okay.
Happy Days was a show I watched a bunch when I was a kid, so like it all came full circle there.
Okay, confession, I could not stand Happy Days.
Really?
See, I don't know why.
Because what I liked about it, because it reminded me, is like, oh, it's like American Graffiti, but the TV show.
I liked it better than American Graffiti, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's just, I don't think I liked the fonts. It's just something about them. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel if you can't get to the fonts, that's definitely one of those ones, like, yeah, it's going to be hard to enjoy anything else in that. Like, that's kind of the thing.
Don Johnson's the fonts in this.
Oh, John Johnson's just, he's just one of those ones, like, it's, he just like stems so much coolness in it, and just how, like, you know, just the look he's got. He really, you know, I think I was watching, like, you know, he's got that same look that like Vince Neil has. It sounds weird, but like those guys actually kind of look sort of similar, like in their face and so on, especially back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that.
You just include the makeup and everything, you put them next to each other, and it's like they actually kind of do have a kind of a similar vibe going. And just once again, we go back to like Don Johnson in the, you know, Miami Vice. He's living on this boat, which is already just a badass way it is. He's got a pet alligator in there named Elvis. Just, you know, just to really top things off. You know, I mean, he gets a cool wardrobe. He's driving a Ferrari. None of this really makes sense because he's a cop. So it's like, where is this money coming from? It doesn't matter.
The 80s.
It's the 80s.
I thought it was funny. Like, he's all on everybody else's case where they're getting this dirty money from. I'm like, bro, you live on a boat. You got this, like, where's your money coming from?
Yeah.
Yeah. You, he's,
you got an alligator that's hopped up on LSD.
Yeah. Bro. Yeah. He's taking some, he's taking some dirty money somewhere, but man, he just, Don Johnson, man, goodness gracious. So much booty in the 80s. I know he did. He just had to be slaying it.
As I said, he had to be the Vince Neil, like, of the TV. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, 100%.
Well, it's just like, it's not fair to have all of it. You know what I mean? Like, he's a good looking dude. Okay, that's fine. But then you're going to have the cool car too. And you're going to have the coolest clothes. And you're going to, you know, leave some for
the
rest
of us. And you got a great accent and everything like that. Like, yeah, he's like the full package. That's always the thing that's kind of weird, because it's like, Don Johnson's so cool. And even like in like his like really older stuff, like there's that one movie like A Boy and His Dog, amazing film that he did in the 70s. But it's kind of funny because it's like, he's that kind of guy that sort of faded out after Miami Vice. And you didn't really see him until he sort of got revived by like, you know, directors like Tarantino and someone like that, who are like, dude, this guy's amazing. We got to bring him back more often. Yeah.
We had that Nash Bridges show for a minute.
Oh, I guess I forgot about that.
What's funny about that show is everybody forgets about that, but I watched the shit out of that show. My mom wasn't a TV person. She didn't watch, like, she did watch some soap operas, which there's a whole funny thing. I'll have to do that another time. There's this whole soap opera arc that I actually want to review on the show because it's so ridiculous. But,
well, what, you know, what it wasn't like, because they always said that when Miami Vice switched its time slot, which I think was on the third season, it was going up against Dallas. And that's almost what was like the beginning of the end of the show. Like, that was starting to kill it, because there's like, no, you can't challenge Dallas now.
No. Miami versus Dallas. That's a good Super Bowl, but not a good, not a good combination. No, it was, she watched those like daytime soap operas in the 90s, and there was a character named Reva that did, I mean, she went, had amnesia, went to an Amish village, she got cloned at one point. Well, it was hilarious. We my siblings and I documented all of it one time, and it was hilarious. But shit, I can't remember where I was going with that. But oh yeah, she watched Nash Bridges. She did watch that. That was like the one primetime thing I can remember her like actually like, let's watch that. And we watched it together. And it was, I remember, I mean, it has Cheech in it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So yeah, they're in there together, and it was a good show. I think it was, I want to say it was set in San Francisco.
That's one of those shows I like. I can picture seeing clips of it back in the day, but I can't tell you a whole lot about it.
You want to talk about something that's been forgotten? It's kind of on the same lines as Briscoe County Jr.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. See, that's the thing about TV shows. It's like, especially older ones like that, if you didn't catch it, like when it kind of was, you know, I mean, granted, there's only that small period of time that, you know, DVDs or you had TV sets on DVD or season sets. But beyond that, that's like so many of those shows, like once they were done, they were done. And that was the thing. They're not like movies that are easier to come across. They don't generally get, you know, syndication unless you're a popular show. So much stuff in television really does get lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nash Bridges, I think it was on CBS. It was in San Francisco. I looked it up. Cheech Marin's in it. It actually had more episodes than this, I think.
Really? I mean, there's five seasons of Miami Vice.
There was 122 episodes of Nash Bridges.
Okay, so that's about exactly the same probably then.
Yeah, I want to say there's actually 144 of Miami Vice, I think. But yeah, he had that thing for a while, and it just went away. It definitely didn't have the staying power of Miami Vice, Nash Bridges.
No. Well, you know, this is where I think what also gave Miami Vice such an edge is it gave you your 80s cop movies like Lethal Weapon and even Die Hard later on and so on like that. But it gave you that kind of thing literally on the TV screen. So you almost could have those kind of movies every week.
Every week. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was such good. Like, yeah, I mean, there was not much that could compare to it. It was not much in its league.
Yeah, and, I say this, Lethal Weapon and Die Hard, like all that stuff, that's like 5 years away from, you know, this almost, or 3 or 4 years away, give or take which one. And yeah. It's almost like this kind of starts like almost like what you think of an 80s cop kind of, well, especially with the movies, this kind of gives that initial early vibe.
Oh yeah. Shane Black was watching the fuck out of Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And taking notes because that you, I mean, all his stuff is pretty much buddy cop, you know, action movies, and they're good. But like, you know, yeah, obviously it did definitely started a trend with that. And it was definitely different than the standard, you know, procedural cop shows of the past where like, okay, we're going to go here and take notes. We're Dragnet and we're going to go do this. And this had like, this was a piece of art. This was like, you know, very stylistic, you know what I mean? And, this first episode, like how does this come? Like, is somebody who's watched the whole thing? Is this like, are all the seasons pretty much just cinematic, or is it kind of go down in tone because it's like, this is the pilot. So they're putting a lot into it.
Though the first two seasons, because I think what happens, if I remember correctly, is Michael Mann does the first two seasons and then something comes up and they switch it up. Like in season, I want to say season 3 and 4 kind of get a little bit more experimental and they start changing things around. And they actually, I want to say in one of the seasons, if it's either season 3 or 4, the show loses sort of that Michael Mann, Miami Vice kind of thing and becomes more of like a regular cop show. Like the colors get toned back, the music gets toned back, all kinds of things like that. It actually gets kind of darker, but I just remember kind of watching through it. And then they try to like turn the ship around by season 5, but it's almost like too late by then. I think four might have turned it around too, but there is a period where it loses sort of its Miami Vice-ness and fits into more of a regular cop show a little bit more. Still good, but
yeah, I mean, this is amazing, this opening thing. I mean, obviously you get to see how Tubbs and Crockett meet, which of course there's going to be the whole, it's so cliche now, but I don't know if it was cliche before this, but the way I'm going to take your badge, that kind of thing. And, you know, then the now they're going to be buddies, you know, they have to be partners, but they don't want to be, there's this, you know, can I trust the guy? That whole theme is always going to play in there. And this has all of that, but I mean, it feels like it was the first to do it.
Yeah, because, well, you know, I'm thinking about them, like 48 Hours is the only thing I think that predates this that I can think of as a real big, like, that's like a buddy cop movie. And I almost want to say 48 Hours is kind of what gives, like, it's probably not the first one, but it is one of the ones that starts that, like, the 80s sort of style buddy cop things. Like, cause I think that movie's 82, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I want to say it's before Beverly Hills Cop. And ironically, Nick Nolte was actually considered to be in Miami Vice.
Oh, really?
As Don Johnson.
Oh, man. It wouldn't have been as good.
No. It would have been, I'll say, because it would have felt right. But like at the same time, Nick Nolte in something just always sounds like, I always just want to see the alternative version whenever someone says, oh, Nick Nolte could have been this. Like Nick Nolte is Han Solo. Like who doesn't want to see that one?
I mean, AI is going to have that fixed for us in the next couple of years. We'll be able to see the alternate casting of everything.
Yeah, once that gets real dialed in, I think we'll get all these extra versions of stuff that you always just kind of like the what ifs.
Yeah, you'll actually have like Harrison Ford in the Solo movie.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Yeah, we're definitely going to be seeing that stuff soon. Or they'll AI Don Johnson and Tubbs into the Michael Mann Miami Vice movie. Instead of Colin Farrell. Yeah, they'll definitely do that. But yeah, this one, you know, really, really good. Don Johnson, when you meet Crockett, you know, he's got another partner. He's kind of divorced. He loves his kid, but, you know, he goes to visit his wife. She's like, you can sleep on the couch, you know, that kind of thing. And he's just not like, you're a salty old son of a bitch who cares about your job, works too late, and gets, you know, meddled in all this dirty stuff that can't be around my house.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
He's the classic 80s workaholic dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he loves his kid. You can tell he loves his kid. And so that's, you know, Don Johnson's kind of character in this. And then at the very beginning of the movie, he's, you know, searching for this Colombian. He doesn't know who he is, but he keeps getting close. And then takes like 3 steps forward and 4 steps back kind of thing. He's trying to catch this guy. And at the very beginning of the show, his friend, is that Jimmy Smits? Wasn't that Jimmy Smits?
Yes. Yeah. The one who blows up.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Smits gets blown away. And, that's basically kind of how the show starts. You got, you know, that's his partner. His partner's gone now because they were making a drug deal and things got changed up a little bit, and boom, now his partner's dead. And yeah. Now he's got even more angst and even more stubble, and he's pissed. And so then that's when the Stubbs situation kind of comes from New York, and they kind of get intertwined in the same thing, and they have to be reluctant partners until they, you know, gain an understanding of each other.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, because Tubbs has that thing where, you know, you learn later on that it's his brother who gets killed, but it kind of gives it a similar vibe of like, oh, I lost my partner and I lost my partner and so on. And then they kind of go on to like, do you do vengeance or do you not do vengeance? Like pulling like a Batman kind of thing going on there. Yeah. Even to the point, like at the very end when they capture the guy who killed it, like, you know, Tubbs's brother and one, he's holding the shotgun on him. And it's just like, you know, you literally see Crockett come up and be like, not like this, Tubbs. Not like this. You know what I mean? Like almost giving him like a Batman speech. Like,
yeah. And you can't kill him, Tubbs. But Tubbs should have blown his ass away because they get real fucked later.
Yeah.
I like how this ends. So how, like, as somebody who's not, how big of a role character the Colombian guy does he play later on in the show? Like, does he come back?
I think he comes back actually in that second episode. Well, third episode, I guess, if you technically look at it like that. I want to say, it's been 20 plus years. As I said, I probably haven't watched this since at least 2005 or something like that, somewhere around that ballpark, 2007 maybe. But the show still kind of, I mean, and each episode is kind of, it's episodic still with like little carryovers, you know, along the way. So it's one of those ones like you could throw on anything and, you know, you're not going to be totally lost. Once you know who the two main characters are, you're kind of good to go.
Yeah. It kind of felt like that. And you still kind of answered my question anyway, because if that guy was a huge, huge part of it throughout the show, you would definitely remember that. So he probably doesn't.
He's not like a Moriarty or anybody like that. He definitely, I want to say it's the third episode, I think he kind of does. And then it starts going into different things or something like that. But I could be wrong. I should just kind of go through, and it does make me kind of want to watch some more of it just because it is that good. It makes me want to watch that Ted Nugent one again, too. They're like, oh, yeah, I forgot Ted Nugent.
Steve Buscemi, which I couldn't remember his name as we were talking before the podcast. His name completely escaped me for like 30 minutes. It was driving me nuts. But yeah, Steve Buscemi's in here. There's so many. I think Julie Roberts shows up in an episode.
Yeah, it's, if I know with Willie Nelson, I was looking down here, and Gene Simmons, I was kind of flipping through some of the list.
Oh, there was some. They were having some parties. They were having some set parties on this show for sure.
Yeah, well, you could test to tell, because it's like in that time period where especially like someone like Gene Simmons was kind of doing more acting type stuff, and this was the hip place to be, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was the show everybody wanted to be on. This is the set. This is kind of what, honestly, this is kind of what replaced the Burt Reynolds vibe, probably.
Yeah,
because you know you were from that kind of, as we said before in those episodes, that Southern homespun kind of feel. And then now we're cocaine, we're sand, we're sun, we're suntan lotion, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that's a different vibe for sure.
Yeah. Well, because it's that thing, as you think about, like, the, you know, the Burt Reynolds kind of movies have a lot of times the wacky police officers. You know, it's the same thing with Dukes of Hazzard, because Dukes of Hazzard's in about, because by the time Miami Vice starts, I almost want to say it's about the time that Dukes of Hazzard just about gets close to its end. Because if it's 9 seasons, I think that show started in 76. I could be kind of wrong, but it's probably starts to fade out by about this point. Cause I know that the one where they go like NASCAR and they're like, then Bo and Luke Duke are like out of the season for like one, like whole year. That's like in the early 80s. Oh, is that really 79? Gosh, I thought that started earlier.
Well, you know how they would do seasons back then. It wasn't the same as today.
No. Yeah. Like
a year had a season. It was, you know, 1 year could have two seasons. Essentially, you had the break during the summer and then you back for season two. They would just keep these people working nonstop. I mean, that was your job. I mean, it wasn't like in these mini series, like, okay, well, we have, you know, this little run of Taboo with Tom Hardy. And then maybe you'll get more episodes. Maybe you won't, you know.
No, yeah. Old school seasons where you were selling program time so you could sell ad space.
And you're going to draw that shit out.
That was the thing, is like, how can we keep people engaged and keep them on? Where nowadays, it's, even though it's ironically now, it's like, I feel like you can get 10 episodes of something and like, it's so drawn out. And you're like, dude, why are these episodes like an hour and 20 minutes long each and nothing's happened in them? When you could go back and watch a show like this, where it's like, they're 24 episodes, 45 minutes each. And you're like, way more stuff happens than this. And like, especially even in 24 episodes, there's actually more content in that than there is even in like six of those other episodes on a Netflix show or something.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on too, does it come from television or is it straight streaming? Because I've noticed the stuff that's made just, hey, this is going to be streamed.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't do that as much. Like, there's less filler. There's still some of it, but it's not as bad. But if you're doing watching like a Walking Dead that's been on TV and then you watch it on like Netflix or something, Walking Dead had so much needless bullshit.
Yeah. Well,
it was terrible.
That's what just kills TV shows for me nowadays. It's just that filler and the useless, like, other characters that have nothing to do with the show, but for some reason they feel like they got to tie them all in somehow. As I said, that's why especially it's like when we're watching like Indiana Jones, even though I know that young Indy plays out more like a movie more than a TV show, but like, you just watch that kind of stuff, you're like, God, these things are just so much more dialed in, like, story wise, and just like, they flow better. They don't have that. They don't just, you know, like some shows people talk about, like, oh, they're like, wasn't that episode great? I'm like, there was 10 minutes in that show that was great, but the other 55 minutes, nothing happened. Like, were you not watching the same show as I was?
It's all built up to that reveal that gets you to turn on back on next week.
And I think that's what I sometimes kind of think of, like, I kind of hate to sort of say it, but like regular folks that aren't like in know of movie making and all that kind of stuff, I think that's the thing, is they remember that 10 minutes of that was really good and they forget the other 50 minutes. I think that's sort of what happens. It's like a weird psychological thing, you know? And for me, I remember the 50 minutes and I almost start to forget the 10 minutes because that 50 minutes sticks in my mind so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was definitely more dialed in the 80s, but it was such a different business model.
Yeah.
And Miami Vice was, I bet they made so much money off the show. It's not just with the advertisements on the show, but just, you know, tie-ins. Because if you're like an upscale brand of any type, you're going to want your shit on Miami Vice. You're going to want Don Johnson to wear your whatever. You're going to want him to drive your car. You're going to want something to happen.
Well, I was going to say, before we were getting started with the episode, I was reading some of the stuff and some of the tie-ins. I think like Macy's or somebody else, they had a section for a while that was like the Miami Vice section of men's clothing you could go in and get. Yeah. Ray-Bans had the special ones. You could get the Don Johnson ones. They made the razor that was literally made to have like the Don Johnson stubble. They were literally, they had a special, I remember seeing this back in the day on that show, like I Love the 80s. But there was like, I think it was called like the Miami, it literally had a name that tied in almost to Miami Vice. I'm trying to blame what the heck it was. Something that rhymed with my Vice. It was a Miami for the Sheriff. God, I'm trying to blank on what it was. I thought of it. Well, whatever. But they had that. So, you know, they just had all these kind of tie-in gimmicks. This reminds me of like one of those ones, like they probably didn't have it as much, but boy, if this was like a 90s show, I bet you would have had some awesome like fast food tie-ins. Get your Miami Vice cups.
Oh man, that would have been dope. I just love the color scheme too. And I would have been, I know I would have been a sucker for this in the 80s. I can't talk any shit. I would have definitely fell into that trap. I would have been
Yeah,
I want to wear this stuff. I want to look this cool. I want to have, just the color scheme especially is perfect. That's the colors I like.
Yep.
It's the teals, the pinks, the, you know, salmons with the white, like the light blues. I mean, what other guys call the gayest colors.
They literally even have a guy in the police department in this episode pretty much say that exact words to Don Johnson. Yeah. And Don Johnson looks like, he's like, well, I got it from your old lady last night.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't my birthday.
He said, where'd you get that a thing from the fruit section or something? Or did you get that from a fruit or something? Fruit
is what he said.
Yeah, and he's like, nah, I banged your wife and took her from her, pretty much is what he said. And they're all like, he probably did.
Wait, it's funny, too, because the shirt he's wearing at that moment, like, maybe
it's
like
a black shirt.
Yeah, if you were in person, maybe you could tell, like, oh, maybe it looks soft and kind of filthy. But, like, on TV, you're like, it literally looks like he's just wearing a black work shirt. Yeah. Underneath, yeah, and slacks, and beige slacks. Like, I don't know what, it's not like, if he was wearing, some neon pink t-shirt or something like that, I could kind of get it, like he does later in episodes. Mm-hmm. But right here, I was just like, I felt like that line, somebody wanted to put that line in somewhere, and they're like, well, we don't really have the right place. Maybe right here, we'll just, like, slap it in there.
Yeah, definitely should have went for that line earlier in the episode when he was wearing the white and the teal.
Yeah.
Before his friend gets blown to smithereens. But yeah, I was surprised too. And I've seen some Magnum PI and I've seen some other stuff. And I know this was at the 9 o'clock time slot, but this is pretty racy for network television. I mean, there was that whole strip club scene. I mean, you obviously don't see any nudity in it, but it was... I was kind of surprised that that was there. I was like, this is kind of edgy for 9 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, I think the time switched to Friday after a while too.
It did.
I think that it premiered on Sunday. And then when it went to like past the pilot run, I think it turned into a Friday show, which that was actually kind of surprising me. I'm like, I always thought back in those days, like Friday was like not the day you wanted to have your major shows on. Because that was actually when people used to actually do things on a Friday. Nowadays, it's like, who cares? Like, a Friday is probably the perfect time to have a show on, you know? But back then, it's like, no way, man. Going out partying and all kinds of stuff, or going to the movie theaters, date night. There's so many things to do, actually. It's the olden days. Arcades. You know, nowadays, it's like, it's Friday night. What's the difference? It's no different than Monday night. It's the same thing out there. Nothing's changed. In fact, there's probably less things open.
Yeah. Well, it was back then too, it was like, you know, the target demographic were the ones who weren't doing that anymore. They're staying at home. It's that, it's my age. It was the 33 through probably 45 was their target demographic for this, you know, guys who want to live vicariously through Don Johnson's badassness. And, you know, so Friday night was probably perfect for them because 9 o'clock, I could stay up. You know, I have to work in the morning.
I can drink a 6-pack of beer and call it good.
Yeah. And give the old missus some disappointment and, you know, wake up in the morning, mow the lawn. And, you know, whatever. But, I guess that was the thing. I was kind of surprised by that, too, when I saw that, too. I was like, Friday? Really? I thought that was kind of like an off night. And I know the show was massive.
Yeah, because I just thought that, only maybe like the 90s when that sort of shit, but obviously not. Yeah, it makes sense that, like, you know, because the target audience for this, I would say, is a little bit older. You know, you're probably pushing late 20s and above. Late 20s, probably to 40s is where they're kind of getting it. But it still has sort of a hipness and an edge that's not saying that a teenager couldn't be into it as well.
Oh, yeah. And it was definitely in the zeitgeist. It was, I mean, the music in this, as we said, they're all hits in this, you know, In the Air Tonight, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, All Night Long.
Yeah.
Just that, there was another one in there somewhere. I can't remember what it was.
I mean, you got the Stones in there too in the beginning.
Yeah, the Stones in there at the beginning, which that was their way of saying this is New York because Scorsese and Stones. That's kind of what they were trying to say, I guess. This isn't Miami. Okay, well, now we're going to have like some, you know, calypso infused pop music. But you know, not in Brooklyn. No, you're gonna have some Stones or something edgier, I guess. But man, this is such a fucking cool, it's such a time capsule. You know, there's few shows I think that really, you know, take on such a, you know, time and place like this show does. Like, it's just so of its time and so iconic because it represents a certain time in Americana. I mean, there's other shows that do that, but not like, I think for the 90s, it's kind of Friends that does it, because you had people want to emulate the style, you know, Rachel's hair, you know, all the celebrities wanted to be on the show. Bruce Willis is on the show. Brad Pitt's on the show. I think in the 90s, Friends was, I mean, Seinfeld and other stuff was big too, but Friends was really the pop show, the cultural driven show. It's the one that you think of when you think of 90s. If you want to get a look and feel of the 90s, I think that's a show you kind of point to the most, even if it's not always very funny.
Yeah. Well, it's because Seinfeld, it's like, you know, there's things that you know, but like that show's kind of a little bit more of a timeless feel. It doesn't have that like, oh, man, this is the 90s. You know, it's not like the Ben Stiller show that tells you 100% before the show's even started and just the intro that it's the most 90s thing you've ever seen in your entire life. It looks like a Soundgarden music video starting up.
God damn. Well, the thing is, you know, between Seinfeld and Friends, too, is Seinfeld is very, they're both very 90s, but that one's very New York. Like, even though they're both set in New York, that one's more indicative. I think of it more of the setting than I do the time period.
Yeah.
With Friends, I think of it's the 90s. That's so fucking 90s. And I think in the 80s, I can't think of another show that's
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. You're probably right. This is probably the second one, I would say, in terms of just culturally significant and of its time. Yeah.
Yeah, because Cheers, to me, like that, I just especially think of that just growing up, like that reminds, like the sound of the intro, the feel of it, like that feels like when I think of like the 80s, that kind of where I feel like if I want to kind of get a feel of the 70s, Taxi kind of does a lot of that. Oh,
God. Bro, I love Taxi. I loved it so much.
God, I used to watch Taxi. That one. Watch Living Daylights out of that. You know, I mean, there's so many of them. I think we even talked a sitcom kind of this out, but it's interesting. And like, I do think that a lot of times sitcoms do time travel you back pretty darn well to like an era, you know, really good. I mean, like when you do kind of go into those places, I mean, it's just literally you watch The Honeymooners, boom, you want to go back to the 50s, you know, or like even kind of pre-era that stuff. It really takes you there. You know what I mean? Like each one, you want that early 60s feel, Leave It to Beaver will do that for you, you know?
Even like, especially with Cheers, just the aura of it, like the tone of the camera, like the filter that it has on it, kind of essentially is the best way to describe it. It just has that look. And Miami Vice has that, but in a different way. It's like, but it's a much more cinematic way. But
yeah,
this is like this is the cool of the 80s. This is, you know, this is us not being normal, everyday mom and pop, Oklahoma, America. This is what everybody wants to be in the 80s. Just kind of like how we said before, Top Gun was for,
yes,
this, you know, this is saying America is badass and it really fucking cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, you just mentioning Top Gun, I'm like, that actually, like Top Gun, because they both came out the same year and they actually have a very similar feel to them.
They do, because they have that same message in a different way, that this America is fucking cool.
Yeah.
That's what we are. I think they come out, I think Top Gun's 86 though.
Oh, no, maybe you're right. 80s. You're right. Now that you say that.
But it's still though, I mean, they're not very far apart. They have the same kind of like, this is the cool part of America. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, geez, we got Red Dawn that came out the same year. So come on, America all the way.
Yeah. I mean, this is Reaganism, man. Like it was honestly, I admire that.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, look, we're flawed. We have all these problems, but let's celebrate the cool shit. Here's what's going on down in Miami. This is the coolest place on planet Earth right now. And this is, you know, Red Dawn's going to show you what patriotism is like. This is why you don't fuck with America. This is why you don't invade us. Okay, because we're going to destroy you. You know, it all had that message to it. Rocky IV.
Yeah, you know exactly. I
mean? So, even though this is slightly Cuban. But yeah, kind of the same thing.
Yeah, no, you know, no matter what, it's always just a neat kind of experience going back to it. There's so much cool stuff throughout this show, and it's that one that like like with a lot of TV shows, you do kind of wonder like how long their lasting legacy is. You know, if you take away Vice City was the one that I felt like was almost the perfect way to capture that Miami Vice feel, you know, along with Scarface and all that kind of era, in a perfect kind of like capsule of like, here's the interactive experience. But you kind of do wonder, like, you know, if they did attempt to do another sort of like, whether they do it a movie or if you did sort of a remake of it as a TV show or what have you. As I said, the Michael Mann movie is actually pretty solid, but that one plays it very like, kind of like a 2000s gritty police. Like that's the thing about it, is it loses a little bit of its 80s-ness in that part. Still great movie, but it's very hard-boiled. It almost comes across more like a 70s movie. in a weird way that like that one sort of made, where it would be kind of interesting to see one where it gave it that 80s feel, but without trying to do tongue in cheek, because that's always the danger zone. Is it sometimes when people try to go for retro feels, is they either go too hard into it and it doesn't seem realistic anymore, like or realistic as in like the era, or they try to do it tongue in cheek goofy, which that kind of happened to a lot of stuff too. I mean, even things like the Starsky and Hutch movie, kind of in a similar time zone there, even though I like that one, but Starsky and Hutch is actually a serious show, but they made the movie like a comedy.
That's what they would do if they remade this now. First of all, they're going to take all the edge out of it. Anything controversial, you know what I mean? Any, you know, thing that made them feel like real human beings instead of like this, you know, NPC kind of like you know, stale, pasty, kind of like whatever. You know, they're going to take all the edge out of it, all the coolness. And I'm not saying it's cool to say some of the things that they were saying in the show. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm just talking about, you know, people being real people. They would take that out. And then they're going to racial swap the characters. Crockett's now the black guy.
Yeah.
Tubbs is, Tubbs is Asian.
Yeah, but maybe change that up like that.
They're going to change that up. And and then Disney will somehow own it.
Yeah.
I don't know how they'll find a way.
And if Disney gets it, then you know it's just going to be very diluted.
Very, very diluted. Oh, God. They even diluted Star Wars.
Yeah.
God damn.
But Disney, they dilute their own stuff nowadays. Like, look at all the remakes of like the animated movies and like how cheap the quality looks. It doesn't even look made for TV quality anymore. It looks even less than that. It's just anything to make a buck.
Well, they're not doing that anymore either. they're losing money hand over fist right now.
That's good. You know, I hate to sort of say it, but nobody likes a monopoly. Unless you're the guy winning Monopoly, I guess maybe that is fun. But then you realize that you lost all your friends in the process of the game. And then you wonder, was it really worth it in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Go woke, you go broke. That's what they're saying.
It's true. And like I kind of hope that we get back to another gritty era again, past the stupid 2010s. That was the softest era known to mankind.
Well, we're leaning into some hardcore shit right now. We just ousted the Speaker of the House this week. We've literally never done that before. I don't like this guy. Fuck him. Get him out. You guys going to save him? No?
Nope.
Didn't think so.
Yeah.
So, we're definitely leaning into some edgier times, whether we like it or not. we'll be chewing on that grit for sure, but. Miami Vice.
Yes.
84 through 89. We watched the first two episodes, which is essentially a TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Broken up by an amazing Jan Hammer theme song in the middle of it. In the beginning, which is just so, so cool. Jan Hammer, go listen to that stuff. There's probably a really good Miami Vice playlist on Spotify, I imagine, that has all the songs.
I was literally thinking that, looking through, I'm like, I got to look up a Miami Vice Spotify playlist. I know I got the one for, of course, Vice City, so it's like, I bet you there's going to be a nice one there. But that's the other thing, too, is this theme song, too. We didn't mention that at all, but, dude, this is one of the best theme songs. Like, dude, it gets you pumped for every episode.
Oh, well, Jan, I remember there's been times I'll just go down the road and listen to Jan Hammer music because it's just so good. It's just... I like so many of these synthwave and Outrun kind of artists try to replicate that sound. And a lot of them do some stuff even better, like the synthy stuff. There's a guy on TikTok and Instagram, Sunglasses Kid, who makes these amazing, he'll create like a scenario like it's the 80s, police chief just took your badge, but you're going to go solve the case anyway. And you're driving across a bridge at night thinking about whatever. And he'll create music to that scenario.
That's cool.
It's so, so good. Sunglasses Kid, shout out. And then people have started adding to it. So he'll do the thing. And then he's usually like piano and stuff. And then somebody will add a guitar riff. And then somebody will add saxophone. And it just becomes amazing. But, yeah, there is a Miami Vice soundtrack playlist on here, which is kind of interesting. Not all the stuff, Miss You, Somebody's Watch. Somebody, that's the other one. So it's going in order of the songs that were in the show. But the other one I couldn't think of is Rockwell, Somebody's Watching Me, because Tubbs is.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The lip syncing that in the strip club.
Yeah.
But like She's a Beauty by the Tubes, Missing You, John Waite. All kinds of stuff. Jamming Bob Marley, obviously. Crockett's theme is the other good theme.
Yeah.
From Miami Vice. And of course, Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? Wonderful Tonight. The show needed a lot of Clapton in it, too.
Yeah, well, because Clapton is what, I mean, that's like, he does the Lethal Weapon music, so like, it only makes sense, you know, that he has that police vibe to it.
He's kind of an adopted Miami person, even though I don't think he lives down there, but he's got that one album cover that's in Miami, and it's got that bluesy tone that just works well with some of that. I don't know, I can't explain it, but like Phil Collins fits in with Miami.
Yeah.
And it's because of this show, but it just, they're synonymous. And like, when I drive down to Florida, the second I cross over the border, Phil Collins every time.
There you go.
That's how I entered the state every single time. Usually with either In the Air Tonight or I Don't Care Anymore. That's how you got to enter Florida. I don't care anymore.
That's like entering San Francisco. You got to bust out a View to a Kill, 007.
There you go. I should have done that when I was out there.
Yeah, it's a good one to cross the bridge with.
I never crossed the Golden Gate Bridge.
You can cross the other bridge if you want. There's three other bridges. So.
Well, I did the Bay Bridge. I went across the Bay Bridge several times, actually.
The Bay Bridge is the one that you pretty much generally cross. That's why it's always kind of funny in the movies. They always show them cross the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, nobody crosses that. Like, unless you live above San Francisco, nobody uses that. Like, it doesn't go anywhere, you know?
That's funny.
But with the Bay Bridge is the one, it's like, that's like the main travel one. Then there's the San Mateo one, too.
I think I may have went across that, maybe. I'm not sure.
That's the one that's like literally, it's like literally on the water almost. Like you're on a bridge, but it's not really like crossing like anything. You're just kind of going to, well, across the water, but you can practically touch the water with it.
Yeah, I don't think I did cross that one then. I've definitely been across the Bay Bridge 100%. I know I was on that
one.
But anyway, Miami Vice. Go check it out. It's on Tubi. If you could stay in the commercials, you could watch it there, or you could buy it, you know, pretty much anywhere. But I am pro Tubi. Even with the commercials, I'm very pro Tubi. It has really good stuff on there. Really good stuff. And even new stuff. I mean, you know, I like it.
Yeah, the selection is, you know, the best. And literally, I'll say is Tubi probably has the best selection of anything out there. It's mostly all the stuff that I can't find anywhere else. They mostly always have it there. It's just
they almost always have it, don't they?
Yeah.
Like if you can't find anything, they have so much on there and it stays on there forever. It's not like they recycle it as much as Netflix. It'll leave, but it'll tell you it's leaving and it'll be like, hey, in 47 days, this is and this is leaving. But Tubi, I'm very, very pro Tubi. A lot of good stuff on there. But anyway, thank y'all for listening. Please go enjoy Miami Vice. Probably one of the most 80s things that we'll ever discuss. And hopefully some more TV pilots in the future. Definitely want to check out Magnum PI. We've mentioned several. Airwolf.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Briscoe County Jr. You know, a lot of TV stuff that we I think Briscoe County Jr. we want to do the whole thing because we can. It's not too much.
It's not too long. I have it's the complete set. Well, it probably would still be, I think it's still 24 episodes or 22 episodes. Not short, but it's not ridiculous. It's not like we're doing all Miami Vice, be like, guess what we're doing for the next 10 years.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I couldn't do Miami Vice. I just couldn't do it.
It would just take too long, yeah.
Oh my gosh, 111 episodes. Too much. But we do have some more TV stuff coming, definitely some pilots, because the pilots back in the day were essentially just movies all the time.
Yeah.
So we can definitely do a lot of those. More TV stuff on the way. As always, if you wanted to discuss anything that we discussed on the show, you can go find us on social media. You can find us on the artist phone, formerly known as Twitter, X. You can find us there. You can at Via VHS. You can find us on Instagram at Via VHS Pod if you still use that thing. Nobody uses Thread, so I'm not even going to discuss that. But TikTok at Via VHS, Facebook, which I'm actually starting to work on Facebook a little bit because I've actually started to kind of make a little community on there. So you can find us on Facebook as well. So anyway, I almost forgot, you can go to oldmanarch.com and find all the stuff Spencer does there. You know, Pizza Boys comic. You can find Old Man Arch podcast and pretty much any amazing thing that he's done. He needs to have a show and tell, I think, section on there where you show all the stuff that you've collected over your lifetime. And still,
I really should. I should just start making like short little videos that just like of just going through my vast old fashioned luggage worth of stuff, because that's mostly why I store everything is in like 1940s luggage.
Hey, there you go. 1940s luggage. That's also a good collector's item. But But anyway, thank y'all for listening. Y'all have a good one. And VHS is out.